The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Hello.
Hello, Bill.
Hey.
This is
Here
Chet.
We are. Yes, sir. I think we're on.
Okay. Is Mike with us?
Mike is not with us. He's been on and off. I'm some technical issues. I'm trying to work backwards here, and I guess we need to find out. Let me see. Danny just messaged me, and let me ask if he can hear us. And we'll figure this out. I don't have any idea what was going on here. We're trying to get my technical man on, and we'll get this thing going. But Mike did try to call in, but
yeah, he said three times. He messaged me three times. He called.
Yeah, well, he did. I think what I have here is I must have a bad connection or something here at this hotel. That's all I can think of. It's got me frozen up because I'm actually on this line as a guest. as well, the host. So let's see what we got. Boy, there's any goods yet?
No.
I'm waiting on, trying to get an answer from Danny. And if we do, we'll start the show. I was on plenty early. Everything was good. I was actually on 11 minutes ahead. Okay, Danny says he can hear us, Chet, so let's get this thing rolling. We'll do the best we can, and we'll go with it, all right?
Let's do it.
Okay. All right, we'll get on. It's Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016. Brewer Technical Difficulties, Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable brought to you by shopforkisses.org. The online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman with the technical issues, and I'll be your host tonight along with my partner, Jim Chechesko. And, Ken, I'm still reeling a bit from last week's show with former Eagle Dennis Franks and with a call-in from his best friend, the Invincible Vince Papale. That is now our number one most listened to show, and what a fun show it was.
Yeah, it really was. Both guys love to talk, and they have some great stories from their three seasons under Dick Vermeil, so it was nice that they were willing to share some of those memories with us.
Yeah, and, you know, before we get rolling here, and we'll have to adjust since we lost Mike, and that's surely our fault, but since we lost Mike, we want to tell our listeners that our trivia prize question tonight, courtesy of Carl's Cards Collectibles, will be the 8x10 black and white photo titled The Last Laugh of Dennis Franks and Vince Papale. Signed by Vince, it's displayed in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This is the carryover prize from last week that we did not get to give out. So we'll do that, and our call-in number will be 929-477-2855. And Chet, that will be done hopefully around 7:30. So we'll try to stay on some sort of schedule. So we're going to give it away tonight, partner. The listeners have been talking about it. Everybody seems to want to win this thing, and tonight we're going to do it.
Yeah, it's an awesome picture. So if you can, you know, good luck with the trivia question. Good luck, and hopefully you win the prize.
All right. Hey, do we have Mike back with us?
Hello, I'm here.
Oh, Mike, thanks. Sorry we had some technical difficulties here trying to run this thing out of a hotel room tonight. So
no worries.
We appreciate you hanging with us. And for our listeners, we have Mike Sielski here. And, Mike, we wanted to, first of all, as we bring you on, congratulate you on winning the first ever Stan Hockman Award, an award given by the Philly Sports Writers Association just earlier this week. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was a great honor. And to be connected with Stan like that is that's a real honor. So thanks.
Hey, Mike, what was the winning story, and what did it mean to you winning this inaugural award? Tell us about the story you won it for.
Sure. It was actually three stories. It was a three-part series I did in November about a pitching prospect for the Phillies named Jairo Munoz, who had a rather incredible route to get to their farm system. He's a native of the Dominican Republic. He came over here having been signed by the Kansas City Royals. They cut him. He was working under the table. He made his way to West Philadelphia, was living in a one-room apartment, working under the table at a bodega, had absolutely no hope of getting back to the major leagues. And this incredible kind of sequence of events played out that allowed him to get a shot with the Phillies again. And it would take me a day and a half to kind of explain the whole thing. But I did that in November, and so that was the article, the pieces that they gave me the award for. And if anybody knows anything about Philadelphia sports over the last half century, they know what an impact Stan Hockman had as a writer, you know, on the radio, on television, you know, as somebody who kept the teams and the people, you know, in Philadelphia sports honest, you know, a champion for Joe Frazier, a champion for Dick Allen, for the Hall of Fame, just a man of terrific integrity. And he died last year, and the association created this award, and this first year they gave it out. So, like you said, to be connected to Stan like that, it's just it's an incredible honor.
Yeah, Stan was one of my favorites, Mike. So, you know, I miss him, and it's great that you won that award because, you know, you're a fine young columnist. So, congratulations. Hey,
well,
Mike,
the nicest thing you said there was you called me young, and I really appreciate that.
Compared to us, you are, believe me. Hey, Mike, we have to get your opinion on what's happened with the Eagles over the past month, the hiring of Doug Peterson as coach, Howie Roseman's return from the dead, I guess, and the news Tuesday that another personnel guy won't be hired until after the draft. What do you make of all this?
Well, I mean, I make of it right now it looks like a pretty big mess to me, and Jeffrey Lurie has staked an awful lot on the acumen of Howie Roseman in terms of being able to kind of right the ship after the last season with Chip Kelly. You know, to me, Lurie bungled this entire thing dating back to last year. You know, if you're going to give Chip Kelly all that power, you have to know going in that he's the kind of guy who's going to do things his way. And whatever changes or recommendations for changes are going to be made, he's going to do them in his time, in his way. And so the idea of keeping Howie Roseman around after you've just kind of cut his legs off and hedging your bets that, well, we're going to keep Chip accountable in case he messes this whole thing up seems to me ridiculous, you know, management of people and, you know, an employment situation on its face. I mean, you know, you had to go one way or the other if you're Jeffrey Lurie. You can't keep, you know, you pick one or the other and you get rid of the other guy. And they kept the other guy in Howie Roseman. So that once things went bad, you've had Howie whispering in Jeffrey's ear for the entire year, and okay, well now Chip is out and Howie's back in. So, you know, what have they been doing since then? Well, they brought on a head coach, Doug Peterson, who is familiar with the organization, isn't getting looked at by any other NFL teams as a potential head coaching candidate. So you've got somebody kind of who's going to, you know, is going to take the job. And he may turn out to be very well to be a terrific head coach. We don't know that. But the process that you got to that point was not exactly a rigorous, thorough search of, you know, all the available candidates. You basically went with somebody who you knew would take the job and be willing to work with Howie. And now you've announced that you're not going to bring anybody on to work with Howie in a player personnel role until after the NFL draft. Now, I don't know about you guys, but you know, that's when, to me, the player personnel process really heats up is after you've drafted all your players for the coming season. So, you know, they're going to have to get somebody in that role. I mean, they seem to be short-staffed right now. And the moves they made so far are retaining players who, you know, were guys that Roseman, generally speaking, brought in. Now, they, you know, that first draft before Kelly had control, they drafted Lane Johnson, they drafted Zach Ertz. And now they've locked those two guys up, and they drafted Vinnie Curry before that, and Curry had not seen the field much for Kelly because they drafted him to be a 4-3 defensive end, and Kelly and Bill Davis ran a 3-4. So, you know, there's a lot at stake here for Howie Roseman, and, you know, the big unanswered question now to me is, what are you going to do with the quarterback position? Are you going to let Sam Bradford test the free agent market and tell him, okay, just find out what you think you're worth, and find out what other teams are telling you that you're worth, and then come back to us? Are you going to go with, you know, a free agent signee and try to draft somebody with the 13th overall pick, which seems rather risky to me? You're counting on lucking into a franchise quarterback. So, to me, it's a bit of a muddled mess right now, and they still have to solve the most important position on the team. And you know, if I were them, I'd bring Bradford back, but I don't know that they're going to do that.
Well, while you're on that, Mike, speaking of Bradford, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you, if they were to bring him back, you want to try to sign him to a long-term deal, maybe 5 years, $80 million, or do you want to franchise him? And is it really fair to the new coach to have his quarterback in limbo here getting started?
Well, I mean, I don't know what kind of deal Bradford is looking for. You know, I don't know you know, I'm not familiar with Tom Condon's thinking on this in terms of what he thinks he can get for Bradford, Tom Condon being Sam's agent. If I were the Eagles, I would seriously think about franchising him and try to feel him out about a 3 to 4 year deal, depending on the money. That doesn't preclude you from drafting a quarterback any year of that deal in the hope that you find somebody you really like and can develop him. You know, that's the hard part. I mean, let's face it, you know, with the rare exception of a guy like an Andrew Luck, who everybody knows is going to be a terrific NFL quarterback once he gets drafted, teams generally end up lucking into these things. I mean, you know, the Seattle Seahawks ended up with a third-round pick as their franchise quarterback in Russell Wilson. If they knew Russell Wilson was the guy, they'd have taken him in the first round. Tom Brady, of course, was a sixth-round pick. The Packers were fortunate that Aaron Rodgers dropped as far as he did in the first round the year that they were able to get him. So, you know, the position is so important. And to me, Bradford showed them enough last year, particularly in the second half of the season, that he's worth taking the risk on as much as a risk it's going to be. You know, he stayed healthy from the waist down, which is what you were looking for. His numbers in the second half of the season were excellent from the bye week on. He looked good. He looked comfortable. Doug Peterson raved about him on the first day, you know, the day he was introduced as a head coach. And you've got guys in the locker room like Zach Ertz, like Jordan Matthews, like the offensive lineman, all of them saying, we need to bring Sam Bradford back. I think he won the respect of a lot of guys on that team by the way he played last season, particularly coming back after basically missing 2 full years with that torn ACL on his left knee. So if I were them, I would do what I could to bring him back because the options other than Sam Bradford are just – they don't compare to me. I mean, it's very easy to say Sam Bradford isn't good enough to win the Eagles a Super Bowl. And the only response I can think of to that is, okay, well, tell me who's available, who is. And do you mm-hmm. want to try to get on that quarterback hamster wheel of, you know, drafting a guy this year and devoting a couple of years to see if he works out. And then if he doesn't, you got to draft another one. I mean, look at what the Cleveland Browns have been through. You know, look at what the New York Jets had been through with Mark Sanchez before they kind of settled on Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Ryan Fitzpatrick's 33, 34 years old. Bradford to me seems the safest, the logical pick, the thing to do. I would franchise him and I would see what kind of deal I could work out.
Yep, that was my thought exactly. Hey, speaking of the Super Bowl, Mike, Super Bowl 50 now just days away. The Panthers are 6-point favorites to beat the Broncos in what will likely be Peyton Manning's last game. Bill and I are going to make our picks later in the show, but how do you see this one playing out?
I think that the Panthers' offense will have an easier time dealing with the Broncos' defense than the Broncos' offense will have with dealing with the Panthers' defense. You know, I just think that Cam Newton, to me, is so dynamic and has been so dynamic, you know, this season. He can, you know, I mean, it's an incredible weapon to have a quarterback who, when it's 3rd and 4 and less, has the ability to carry the football and get the first down, even when the defense knows it's coming, because they can gear up to stop him, and he might still get the first down. And even if he doesn't carry the ball, he throws it or hands it off, then you've got the defense on its heels. And as good as Denver's defense is, I don't see their offense putting up enough points against that Carolina defense with Manning playing the way he's playing and his kind of inability to get the ball down the field. I'm looking at like 23-20, 23-17 Panthers.
All right.
Interesting. Hey, Mike, you know, it's 80 degrees down in Florida today. We're only about 2 weeks away now. Pitchers and catchers are coming in. Is this going to be another dreadful – hope we don't reach 100 losses for the Fightins coming out of Clearwater this year. What do you think?
Probably, yeah, but I think it'll have a different tone to it. I mean, they're so young, and there are more interesting storylines and interesting players to look at and to see grow. Yeah, they're not going to be good. I mean, you look at their lineup, and it doesn't look like they're going to hit a whole lot. You know, their pitching is question marks all over the place. But they're young question marks, and, you know, throughout the lineup and in the starting rotation of the bullpen. And so there's at least intrigue. You're not You're not trotting Chase Utley out there for another year. You're not running Jimmy Rollins out there for another year when everybody knows, look, it was time to move on from these guys.
There is Ryan Howard, though.
There is Ryan Howard, which and you know, it remains to be seen how much Ryan Howard is actually going to play. I'm not convinced Pete McKinnon is going to run him out there just for the sake of running him out there like they did last season. So, you know, I'm curious to see how some of these guys develop. One, the interesting guy to me, because he never gets mentioned in any of the talk of, you know, two or three years down the road when the Phillies start to get good, you know, if all these young prospects they have pan out, is Odubel Herrera. I mean, he had a pretty good rookie season. He really did. And, you know, for one, I'm curious just to see how he does. You know, is there something there with this guy who's a Rule 5 pick, you know, and they gave him a shot last year, and he hit all year. You know, he didn't go through any prolonged slumps. He was pretty consistent, played decently in the outfield. And, of course, Mikel Franco. You know, let's see what – I want to see him take a step forward, obviously. So I'm actually heading down there the first week of March when the games begin, and I'm looking forward to it because it'll be fresh and different, and then the season will start, and they'll, you know, lose 90 to 100 games, but at least it'll probably be a little more interesting.
Hey, speaking of young outfielders, you wrote a piece on Nick Williams a couple of weeks back, one of seven Phillies prospects on MLB.com's top 100 list, which is pretty amazing for the Phillies. Are you at all optimistic about this team maybe a couple or 3 years down the road?
I think they did a lot to improve their standing with some of the deals they made, you know, dating back about a year and a half ago. I loved the Hamels deal for the sheer fact that they got a volume of prospects. They got five. And, you know, I'll take, you know, my chances that, you know, basically you acquire a prospect either by trading for one or drafting for one, and I look at it like throwing a dart at a dartboard while you're blindfolded. And, you know, I'd rather have – I don't care about the ratings. I mean, if you can – you know, people complained about the Hamels deal, but they didn't get any of the Rangers' top three prospects. Well, okay, but they got their next, what, four or five. And so I'll take five chances that while I'm wearing the blindfold, I'll throw the darts and at least one or two of them will hit the board somewhere near the center than if you only give me three. And so, you know, I like what they've done lately, too, in terms of changing their draft strategy, you know, going after college pitchers, going after guys who can get here quickly, you know, a kid like Aaron Nola, who certainly didn't seem flustered in any regard last season. You know, everybody wants to see what kind of strides he makes, you know, this coming season. Now that hitters are going to be familiar with him and he'll have a full season to work with. But I am optimistic that within, you know, two or three years that, you know, summers can get back to being a little more fun in Philadelphia.
Hey, Mike, we have to hit you on one more thing. Let's talk Flyers for a minute. And
sure.
You know, this team's kind of up and down. They play great against some good teams, and then they lose to Toronto. And, you know, is this team capable of making the playoffs at this point, you think?
I don't think so. I really don't. I think that the way they're constituted now, they have to give maximum effort and have everything kind of go right almost every night. To win. You know, they just rely so much on those top three or four forwards, you know, Voracek, Giroux, Simmons, Couturier, now that he's back. I mean, they had a good effort Tuesday night against the Canadiens because, in part, Couturier was back. But beyond that, those third and fourth lines really don't give them very much. And while they have more speed on defense and more puck-moving ability, now that Shane Gostisbehere is there and now that Michael Delzato is kind of settled in, they're just not deep enough yet up and down their roster to make a kind of prolonged push that it would take for them to get to the playoffs. But having said that, I kind of feel about them the way I do about the Phillies, that, you know, in a year or two, when you see some of the prospects they have in their system now start to come up, kids like Travis Konecny, the forward they drafted in the first round last year, you know, Ivan Provorov, the young defenseman who everybody is raving about, and they took with the seventh overall pick last year. I know I knew that they loved him going into the draft, and they were fortunate that the Devils had the pick before them and took another defenseman, didn't take Provorov. And I know the Flyers kind of breathed a sigh of relief because they wanted Provorov. They were really familiar with him. He had played in Wilkes-Barre, and he's you know, I think he's going to be the real deal. So, and you've got other defensemen, Travis Sanheim, you know, Samuel Morin, you know, guys down in the system who really are impressing people. So, you know, they're going to have to get some more scoring eventually, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to do that. But are they a playoff team now? No. But I think for the first time, you can see them kind of, you know, looking at the broader future instead of just staying on that orange and black hamster wheel where they're trying to get in the playoffs every single year and doing everything they can to get in the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup, and they'll trade their future for a shot at the Cup in the present, and, you know, it never worked. And I like what Ron Hextall's doing as a general manager, and I think it has a pretty good chance of working out.
Hey, final question, Mike. We have to talk about the Sixers real briefly. When we had you on in October, you said you thought the Sixers were probably the most likely of the four pro teams in Philly to contend for a championship over the next, you know, five or whatever years. Do you still feel that way?
You know, I don't, only because I'm surprised and impressed with the strides forward that the Phillies and the Flyers have made. I still am a little more bullish on the Sixers' future than a lot of people are, if only because they do have they have so many of these assets kind of collected over time. they're likely to have at least two first-round picks in this year's upcoming draft. You're going to have Dario Saric coming over from Europe next season. You're going to have, presumably Joel Embiid healthy. You know, they're crossing their fingers about that, obviously. The thing that people miss, I think, about what Sam Hinkie had been doing and what Jerry Colangelo has helped him do since coming on board is, you know, it didn't necessarily have to be in the NBA. It doesn't necessarily have to be a steady upward arc. You can make a great leap, and Hinkie, I think, has always been willing, if the right situation presented itself, to try to make a big trade to accelerate the process. And his feeling just is you have to accumulate enough assets and enough desirable players and, you know, desirable draft picks to be able to do that. So let's see what happens. Do Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor look like they can play together right now all that well? They don't, okay? But you don't necessarily need – you have an entire second half of the season to see more of whether they can make it work. You're going to probably have some time next season as well to see if they can make it work. Plus, you know, you can play around a little bit with Embiid, presumably, if he's healthy. You're going to have a chance to find out what combinations work, what the market might be for one or more of these guys in a trade, and then things will get interesting. I mean, that's the thing about Colangelo that people forget. He turned the Suns around in the late 80s by trading the roster's best player. They had won 28 games in 1987, and they were involved in a big drug scandal, and the franchise was really a dark, dark place. And he traded Larry Nance to the Cleveland Cavaliers for a bunch of players and included Kevin Johnson, who became the point guard of the team that went to the finals in 93. And he was able to turn things around very, very quickly. I think he and Hinkie, if they're able to get along and form a kind of creative tension, theoretically that could work. Is it going to guarantee? Is it guaranteed to work? No, of course not. But, you know, it still is a possibility.
Very good. Well, hey, Mike, I think we used up all your time. We certainly apologize again for
no problem,
for our
guys.
Technical difficulties, and we certainly appreciate your patience and hanging in there and joining us, and hopefully we can do it again.
Anytime. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay,
all right, take
Mike,
care,
thanks.
Fellas.
Good night.
All right. All right. Hey, Chet, we're going to – Mike's always good stuff, always great stuff, and fantastic award he won, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
First ever Stan Hockman Award. Very good. And, our good friend Steve Swickowicz, you know, Swit, your old buddy, been getting around these days with his new sports venture taking off, and we wanted to have Swit back so he could tell us a little bit about what's going on, and he's representing some Philadelphia athletes, so we wanted to give him a chance to come on and tell us a little bit about that. So, Swit, welcome back, my friend.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. That's a tough act to follow there, Mike Silski. He's a grade A all the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, first of all, let's get the Fred Barnett appearance out of the way, and you kind of beat me to the punch, Bill. You know, you and Chet, and maybe even some of the your listeners know, over the last couple of years, I started representing a few, now it's up to a dozen or more former players in our local area, mainly Eagles, a couple Flyers, a couple Phillies. And a week from Saturday, the 13th, from 2 to 3 o'clock, Fred Barnett will be appearing at the Neshaminy Mall in conjunction with Georgia's Sports Cards and Collectibles and the Sports Memorabilia Show that's going to be taking place at the Neshaminy Mall. Fred will be signing right there in front of Macy's on an elevated stage. Tickets are $20 per autograph. It includes a photo op as well. To get tickets, you can do it one of two ways. You can go to georgescollectibles.com, or you can get the tickets at the signing. It's sure to be a really fun event. Fred does live in the area. However, he doesn't really do many autograph signings, but we got him to do one on the 13th, and we expect a good turnout.
All right. Good luck with that, Swit. We've had Fred on the show, by the way, about a year and a quarter ago, and he was a lot of fun. Plus, I met him again a few weeks ago, and he's a good guy, and he'll certainly do well with all the fans who come out to see him. Swit, you are also a hockey guy, so briefly, what's your take on the Flyers this year? They're still 5 points out of that final Eastern Conference wild card spot. What is your view of the Orange and Black so far this season?
Yeah, and I heard Silsky talk about he doesn't think they're going to make the playoffs. And, you know, normally I agree with Mike, but here I actually disagree. If you would have told me before the All-Star break, or before the Washington game, I should say, I would have said no. But they got a big win in Washington prior to the break and then followed up with a good solid win last night, coming, scoring two and third to beat Montreal. So they're at 52 points right now. However, if you look at the standings, the team that they're chasing right now in the final two wildcard spots, Boston has 58 points and Pittsburgh's at 57. They have games in hand on both of those teams. And then you have a bit of a logjam with Jersey and Carolina at 57 and 54 points respectively. But they have three games in hand on those teams. So I look at this in the next five games. They play five times in the next 7 days. They have Nashville, the Rangers, Washington, Anaheim, and Buffalo. If they could get 7 or 8 out of the 10 possible points there, I think that's going to be a real telling sign. But I'm holding out hope. The power play has been excellent of late, and I really think they're going to do it. And just because, going back, mainly because they have those games in hand on all the teams that I mentioned.
Yeah, they have a busy week with the 5 games in 7 days. As you said, they have 15 games in the month of February, so 29 days. A very busy and a very crucial month for the Flyers. Just one other question about, you mentioned the All-Star break. What did you think of Sunday's game with the new format? The two mini games and then the one final game to decide who wins the $1 million. What do you think of all that?
Yeah, Chad, I was really skeptical when I heard of the format. And I was expecting like maybe a 12 to an 11 type game and offense all over the place. But I was really pleasantly surprised. It was good hockey. And there was some good goaltending in there, much to my surprise. So I was really happy with that new format. And how about a goon winning the Most Valuable Player award? That really had topped off the weekend. I mean, anybody familiar with the John Scott story? Here's a guy that the fans voted him in kind of almost as a joke, it started out as. He got in, the league tried keeping him out of the All-Star game, and he walks away with the hardware and the Most Valuable Player award.
Pretty wild.
Very good. All right, Swit. Well, hey, we appreciate you jumping in on us. Good luck with your Fred Barnett and your other Philadelphia athletes venture, and come on back and see us.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, take care, Swit.
Good luck. Okay, Ted, let's get our trivia question out there since we are running a little bit behind. And this one, you know, we're giving away that Vince Papale, Dennis French photo and signed by Vince. But you better have your thinking caps on to get this one. All right, here we go. In Eagles history, Chip Kelly became only the second head coach to make the playoffs in his first season as head coach in 2013. With his 10-6 record. Who was the first coach in Eagles history to make the playoffs in his first season as an Eagles head coach? Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer that question, 929-477-2855. Let me do that real quick again. In Eagles history, Chip Kelly became only the second head coach to make the playoffs in his first season in 2013 with his 10-6 record. Who was the first coach in Eagles history to make the playoffs in his first season as Eagles head coach. All right, very good. Hey, Jeb, we have a caller. Let's get him on. He's been real patient here waiting on us. And who do we have on the line?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, who is it?
Got?
Hey, Jim and Bill, it's Mark. How are you?
Hey, Mark
hey,
McClain,
Mark,
how are
how
you?
How are you?
Okay, buddies, how are you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to call in because it's obviously Super Bowl week, and I see that the Eagles have gone to the second straight off season of As the Eagle World Turns soap opera. So I just wanted to chirp in for a minute and ask you how you think right now what your feeling is about Bradford.
Boy, we've been going back and forth about Bradford for weeks and weeks, and I've kind of wavered on him myself. And I'm going to stick with what I said a couple of weeks back when we talked about it, which I think is what Mike Sielski said also. I would sign him for the franchise tag deal this year, 1 year at, you know, $20 or $22 million, whatever it is. But in the meantime, I would draft a quarterback in the third round or, you know, trade for one if there was somebody available. I'm not going to give Bradford long-term big money. I'm not going to pay him 4 or 5 years and, you know, $80 or $90 million, whatever the going rate would be. I just don't think he is the guy that's going to take you to the Super Bowl. And that's something else that Mike Sielski said. I would keep him for 1 year, though, just to kind of get things off on the right foot for Doug Peterson. But I would continue to look elsewhere. He's not my guy long-term.
Bill, you feel the same way?
Well, I kind of do. But you know what? I'm wavering a little bit on this because I'm surprised they haven't made that happen already. I'm thinking that maybe they're letting this thing play out a little bit. And, you know, the more I think about it, and I know the fans will be scared to death if this happens, is maybe they think under Peterson's offense that Mark Sanchez can run this thing for a year.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, here's how I'm going back to it, and this is going to probably shock the world from my theory, because I'm starting my 59th year as an Eagles fan. I don't see them, you know, there's certain guys on radio that really see them getting Bradford back next year and making the playoffs next year. If you check their schedule out to begin with, I think it's a tougher schedule. And even if you do have the money available for a franchise scenario, which, Jim, I agree with you, the only possible way I ever consider it would be franchise 1 year. I'd never go into long term. I'm willing to – when they signed Peterson, it was like vanilla pudding. You know, it was nothing to jump out of the seat about. I think he's a nice guy. And I think we all have to give the guy a chance, obviously, but – you know what? I just don't see this team as being certainly not a Super Bowl team next year.
No.
And I'm tired of mediocre for not only you guys who are a generation younger than me, but the younger ones that are listening to this show and stuff like that. It's about time this organization get a Super Bowl victory, you know, and if you're going to really purely, and this is DeLurie, the owner, if he really, really sincerely wants to bring that championship in, he's got to rebuild to a point right now. And I just don't know if we got enough of the cap structure that Chip has left us with to get the offensive linemen we need, the linebackers we need, the secondary we need, and a draft that has weak quarterbacks to begin with this year. You know, I've watched that Clemson quarterback very faithfully five or six times this year. And the SEC is still a very tough track in college football. And I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't have them a problem if they were in last place last year and got that Watson. Because
yep.
I think if you really want a franchise quarterback, he would be one that would change your attitude a little bit, seeing him in Eagle Green, I'll tell you that much.
Hey, Mark, we'd love to talk more, but we got to get moving here because we are a little behind schedule tonight. So enjoy the
okay.
Super Bowl, and we'll talk more in the offseason, I'm sure.
Okay, can I throw something at the trivia real quick?
Go ahead.
I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to say Ray Rhodes.
Well, the only problem with that, Mark, is you called in before we asked the question, so we can't really give you the answer until you get. Since you called in before the question was asked, you had an unfair advantage.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
I'm sorry, I blew it for you.
we have a caller sitting here, and actually, we don't even know that that's the right answer, but we do have a caller sitting here waiting to answer this question. Let's see what we got.
That's fine with me. Give it to him. Hope he wins it. Point blank, it just shows me the truth. Gives me one thing. I haven't got Alzheimer's yet, Bill. All right.
So there you
that's
go.
A positive, that's a positive.
Good
thing,
to hear.
All right.
Thanks,
all right,
Mark.
Guys. Thanks, buddy.
Good talking to you. Bye bye.
Take care.
All right.
Who's on the line?
Who do we have on the line to answer our trivia question tonight?
Lomas Brown.
Lomas Brown.
That's right, Hugo. That's the hint because it is Ray Rhodes.
Lomas Brown. I got you. I got you with the Lomas Brown.
It is indeed Ray Rhodes. In 1995, he was 10-6 after taking over for 7-9 Rich Kotite in 1994. So, Fred, you said today you were going to win that picture, and you, my friend, are the winner.
Oh, that was perfect because that was like my first Eagles playoff game that I remember as a win. I remember that Hail Mary to, I believe it was Rob Carpenter at the halftime. That was awesome.
Wow.
That was the coolest game ever. That was cool.
Lomas Brown is the one who guaranteed the victory when the Lions played the Eagles, right?
Yep, correct. And everyone was chanting, Lomas.
Yeah, it didn't turn out so well for the Lions.
And I was in the vet that day for that Lomas game myself, and it was cold as cold could be.
Yep.
All right, well, Fred, we will get that out to you. We, as you know, we're running a little short on time, but we appreciate you calling. And I know that you have a connection with Dennis Franks yourself, so real good chance you could get Dennis to sign that along with Vince. It'll be a great piece.
That's the plan. Thanks, guys. Great show.
All right, Fred. Thanks. All right, Chad, let's get some business taken care of right quick, and let's get Carl's Cards and Collectibles signings lined up again. And the Bobby Clark private signing for February 9th has been postponed for a little while. It'll be coming back at a future date, but it is not going to happen on February 9th. However, there will be a private signing with Phillies Wiz Kids pitcher Kurt Simmons on March 4th. Newest Flyer Hall of Famer Jimmy Watson will be in the store on March the 5th. And one of my all-time favorites, Monsignor Bonner graduate and Penn State Heisman Trophy winner John Cappelletti will be in the store on April the 23rd. What a lineup, Chad. And I know every time Carl goes down to Clearwater for spring training, which he's going to be going down for a little while again this year, he always comes back with another list of guys that he's going to bring in to sign. So I'm looking forward to that as well. So
stop by Carl's
Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road, Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit his website, carlscards.com, or contact him on Twitter at Carl's Cards. And, you know, Chad, I have another announcement. One of my old buddies asked me to give a shout-out to any of the Notre Dame fans out there. My buddy Chip Brady is at Collectors Clubhouse in North Hanover Mall in Hanover, Pennsylvania. That's pretty far out there, but he will have the legendary Fighting Irish coach Lou Holtz in their store Saturday, March 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. And they'll also be doing mail order for anybody that can't make it out to Hanover. Like I say, it's pretty far out there, but you can get mail order for this as well. You can contact Chip Brady at bradychip13@yahoo.com or give him a call, 717-968-6243 for details. Again, that's a Lou Holtz signing on March the 26th. All right, Chet, Super Bowl prediction time, my friend. And, you know, you've been the man throughout the playoffs, and you actually finished second in the Philly Press Box Radio Pick'em Pool. So first, before you tell us who's going to win, and then I tell you who's really going to win, I wanted to let our listeners know that Philly Press Box Radio is actually going to take a week off next week ourselves after 22 consecutive weeks of shows. Pretty good, my friend. Didn't seem like that, but You know, we had Mike Sielski, Mark Eckel, Brandon Gauthen, Kevin Riley, Ray Dittinger, Merle Reese, Fred Hugo, Bob Sullivan, Ed Chambers, Dennis Franks, Carl Henderson, Vince Papale, Tom Moore, Frank Fitzpatrick, Mike Barnes, Mike Reichenbach, and Kevin Cooney.
And
all
Swit.
Joined us during the Eagles, and Swit, all joined us during the Eagles season, and it was a lot of fun, even though maybe the Eagles season wasn't quite as much fun as we hoped for. Having those guys join us, and sure doesn't seem like 22 weeks, but it's been a lot of fun, and we've seen and done a lot of things with a lot of good people, so it's really been enjoyable.
It has, and we need a week off next week, I'm telling you.
Yes, we do. Well, with that said, my friend, who wins Super Bowl 50?
All right, let me preface it by saying I'm really, really going to be rooting for Peyton Manning to get that second Super Bowl victory and then ride off into the sunset, but it's probably not going to happen. I just think the Panthers have too much offensively, even for a solid Denver defense, number one in the league overall as far as yardage allowed. So my prediction, Panthers 27, Broncos 17.
27-17.
Mark
okay.
it down.
I got it marked down. Well, you know what? I am a little perplexed about this game. The Broncos' defense is really good. The Panthers overall are really good. But, you know, there's one thing that I want to see, Chad. You being as old as I am, or older than I am.
Just about
you
the same.
Remember,
let's say about the same.
There you go. You remember the swagger of the Miami Hurricanes against the Penn State Nittany Lions many, many moons ago in the 80s?
I do.
Well, you know what? The Panthers have some swagger, and the Panthers have not seen a whole lot of adversity. And I want to see when the going gets a little tough for that Panther offense, which I think the Denver defense is capable of doing, I want to see how the Panthers respond to that. And because of that, I'm not a huge Peyton Manning fan, you know, overall. And I don't really care if Peyton Manning wins a second Super Bowl or not. I have no personal interest in Peyton Manning. But I just think it's going to be a pretty good game. And because of that, I am going to go 27-24 Denver.
Whoa.
With a game-winning field goal by Temple's Brandon McManus to win the game late.
Wow. How about that? I would love to see that. I'm rooting for the Broncos, like I said, but I don't know that it can happen. Of course, it can happen. I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
Well, the wild card for me is for the Panthers could win this game is Ted Ginn. Ted Ginn could be, you know, a punt return, a kick return. He could do something that swings the game real fast in the other direction, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Panthers got out in front and ran Denver out of the building. But I think if Denver plays a conservative game, keeps the Panthers offense off the field as much as they can, and doesn't have a bunch of turnovers, I see that Penn State-Miami game in my head and see how the swagger responds.
Don't forget that other Panthers wide receiver, Philly Brown. He could make some big plays too. So yeah, I hope it's a fun game. I hope it's a close, tight game.
Yep. Well, and I hope it is too. All right, Mr. Chesko, we're pretty much getting back on schedule. A parting shot for you?
Yeah, we've been talking about it. But in case you haven't heard, there is a big game this Sunday. It's an ultimate matchup between Pro Football's two surviving teams. Those are the kind of words, the kind of stuff you hear a lot of advertisers saying these days, because if they say the words Super Bowl, the NFL will get really, really mad and maybe slap a cease and desist order on them or worse. 2 years ago, Stephen Colbert did a funny thing with the spacing of the two words, touting his own superb owl coverage. Get it? Superb owl. I don't really understand exactly how the NFL would be hurt by a little franchise saying it's offering Super Bowl specials or whatever. I mean, the league already makes 80 gazillion trillion dollars off this big game, doesn't it? Oh, that's right. It's just the NFL throwing its weight around and reminding everyone that, yes, it is still the no-fun league. And one other thing, NFL, you wisely dropped the Roman numerals from the Super Bowl logo this year. You know, Super Bowl 50, 5-0, nice. Why can't that be a permanent thing? But nope, not going to happen. Next year, it'll be Super Bowl LI. Okay, whatever.
Well, I prefer the numbers myself because I don't know the Roman numerals. Can't remember them all. They get too
exactly.
far up on me.
Too tough to figure out.
That's right. 5-0, I can figure out.
Yeah.
All right, Chet. Well, you know what? I am going to – I got my parting shot got lost in my technical difficulties here, so I do not have a parting shot tonight. Any other hot item on your mind as we have about 1 minute?
Let's see. I mentioned earlier the Phillies have 7 prospects in the top 100 on the new MLB.com list. That's up from 3 last year, and it's it's more than anybody else in Major League Baseball. I think one other team also has 7. So, as Mike said, things are looking up for this team, and you know they could be good sooner rather than later. Maybe by 2017, even they could be contending. Who knows? 18 at the latest, I'm thinking. I'm going to try to go down. I am going down to Clearwater in early March, so maybe I'll see Mike Sielski down there. I'm hoping to meet up with you down there. And I'm going to catch a Phillies spring training game. So I love spring training baseball. I can't wait to get down there and see what it's going to look like this year up close in person. So I'm ready for baseball.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you as well when you come down. Our friend Carl Henderson will be down. Adam, you Jettis will be there. I pronounced his name wrong again. And I think we might even run into our boy Danny Bevins down here. So we'll see. He keeps saying he's going to pay off that bet, but
yeah,
we'll see if he actually shows up.
Yep. But
looking forward to it. Always fun in the spring down here. And it'll be fun to watch the young fighting Phils this time around.
For sure.
All right. Well, hey, Chet, we're at the top of the hour. Let's thank our special guests, Mike Sielski and Steve Swickowicz, for joining us. Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continued support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes. And our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, February 17th. That's 2 weeks from tonight at 7 p.m. with our special guest, Comcast Sportsnet 76ers beat writer D. Lineham. Looking forward to that again. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/boxradio and now on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes. Philadelphia sports fans.
Gene Hart, good night, good hockey.